Thank you. Thanks for the invitation to give a talk here. It's always great to visit Santa Barbara and the UCSB. I just want to say that before I start, what a shock it was to hear about Joe, and I want to dedicate the talk to him, to his memory. Actually, there's one aspect of the talk which directly relates to Joe's work with Ed, which I will mention in the middle, but anyhow, so it's a very sad occasion. Anyhow, so today I'm going to tell you about some aspects of the work we have been doing on relation between six-dimensional superconformal field theories and how you get to four-dimensional, and what do they tell us about four-dimension. This is based on a number of papers with Heechul Kim, Shlomo Razanot, and Gabby Zaffer. So the plan for the talk is, I start basically giving you a brief overview of what are these 61,0 superconformal field theories. How do we go from there to four dimensions on a Riemann surface or a curve? And I'll give some special examples of these 60 theories, which involve, for example, 2M5 brains probing a one singularity in M-theory context, or what's called E-strings, and also conformal matter, what I will mention what this means, on a two-dimensional torus with flux. So these will be some specific examples of how you go from four and what kind of things we learn. So that's basically the theme of the talk, but the general thing is going to be that what we're going to see is that we're going to learn things about four-dimensional theories that from the four-dimensional perspective looks very surprising, but six-dimension explains it. In other words, the six-dimensional perspective allows you to understand what would look like emergent symmetries from 4D perspectives in a more natural way from 6D. So that's the basic theme. So there are two types of superconformal theories in six dimension, depending on how much supersymmetry we have, with 2-0 or 1-0, and we know they exist, and they typically involve tensionless strings at the conformal point, and we have no Lagrangian formulation for any of them. And we believe the 2,0 case is classified by the ADE. We know the 2,0 six-dimensional superconformal field theories, the A class is given by parallel M5 brains, and the D and E are best described in the type 2B language with ADE singularities. So the 2,0 is studied quite a bit. The 1,0 has recently been classified, and we have learned more about what kind of properties they have. And they look like some kind of generalized quiver theories, not the usual quiver, but some kind of a generalized notion of what quivers mean in six dimensions. And it seems like many interesting CFTs in lower dimensions can be obtained by compactifying them, and that I'm going to be focusing specifically to four dimension, going down from six to four, and what we learn about 4D theories. And of course, we can conjecture, and it'll be interesting to check whether every conformal field theory in lower dimensions, even supersymmetric or not, could be obtained, whether or not they could be obtained from 6D perspective always. That would be an interesting thing potentially to look for, whether or not these are kind of the mother of all conformal field theories. That would be very interesting.
Can you remind us of why you think that conjecture might be true?
It's a question, really. The main point is that all the examples we know in 4D can be described that way. So, at least the ones which... Sorry?
But there are many 2D examples.
People have studied some of the 2Ds, for example, the Kazuma-Suzuki models and all that stuff. They have derived it in the context of string theories, and they would relate to these theories as well. So, for example, M5 brain at angles and all that have been related to those and so forth. So the main thing is a question, really. So you can view it as a question. Can they be obtained or not?
And something like the Wilson.
Yeah, so you have to break supersymmetry, of course, and so you could imagine. So people have done related that to supersymmetric version of this, and for example, Kasher et al. Tried to use a supersymmetric version and break supersymmetry, and the supersymmetric version can certainly be obtained in this language. So it would be a deformation of these, but some part of the geometry breaks supersymmetry. So it would not be that surprising to get everything. I don't see any no-go theorem. Let me say it that way. Whether or not it's proved or not is different. So it could very well be that this is the mother of all conformal theories, supersymmetric or not. But anyhow, the goal in this talk, of course, is much far more modest. I'm just going to study some classes of these. So the basic thing is that if you look at the superconformal group in six dimensions, all SP6,2 with N, and even the existence of the superconformal group requires a triality structure, basically of the SO8, really. That plays into the meaning of what this has to do with the conformal symmetry group. 2,0 case has SO5 R symmetry and no global symmetries, and 1,0 has SU2 R symmetry, and it can have additional global symmetries as well. So 2,0 case we are familiar with, just the parallel M5 ring is a typical example, and this is what's called the A-type 2,0 superconformal field theories. I won't talk too much about it other than saying they exist, and then the type 2B versions of them, which you can obtain by going to considering type 2B on C2 mod out by AD subgroups of SU2, and these quotients will give you singularities, which is the infrared. They correspond to these 6D conformal theories. For the AD case, we have a nice Coover description that you blow up, basically, and this gives you some description of the tensor multiplet structure and the corresponding intersection between them. So it's just encapsulated by these Dinkin diagrams. They are not the gauge groups, but they capture the structure of these strings and their intersections. The 1,0 case, which is half the supersymmetries, have conjecturally been classified based on realization in the F theory. And a number of them have dual to M-theory constructions. So the F-theory is like the type 2B version, kind of. And the M-theory version, some of them can have F-theory, M-theory version of duals. So the way the F-theory construction looks is that you have a four-dimensional, so you have a Calabi of threefold. You have an elliptic fiber times a four-dimensional manifold, which is two complex dimensional base, we call B. So the elliptic fibration varies over points. As the coupling constant of type 2B varies, the complex structure of this torus varies. And that's the usual story for the relation of F theory to type 2B. So what are some basic examples? So one basic example is that you look at AD in the M theory language. You start with an AD singularity. AD singularities has a loci which is seven-dimensional because you go from 11-dimension to seven-dimension on a four-dimensional AD singularity. So they're seven-dimensional, and then M5 brains are six-dimensional objects, so they will be points on a seven-dimensional line. So basically, you just take NM5 brains and you put it on the AD singularity along this line, and this will give you some simple example of 1,0 theories. You have NM5 brains has 2,0 and AD breaks half the supersymmetry, you get 1,0 superconformal theories when you bring all these points together. And these theories, this is called what's called the A-conformal matter, in the sense that you see you have basically, if you take, this generalizes, of course, to AD, any AD or E, and there is a global symmetry which comes from the gauge symmetry living on the seven-dimensional locus. As you recall, the AD singularities in M-theory give you gauge symmetries, but the gauge symmetry in seven-dimension from the perspective of 6D looks like global symmetry. So you get global symmetry inherited on when you bring this together from the left and from the right. So this theory will have global symmetry ADE coming from the left and ADE from the right. So you expect automatically a global symmetry of this type in these 6D theories. And in the type 2B version, or F theory, you get the same picture basically by a chain of dualities. Instead it looks like the same picture I was drawing for the AN singularities, let's say, so you have these blow-off singularities, which are just the geometry of these P1s touching each other at points. But now the difference is that you also have wrapped D7 brains around these P1s. And so that will give you the analog of this. And so you have D7 brains, which are on the left and right, which gives you global symmetries on the left and the right. And these will give you gauge symmetries in the middle. So this literally looks like a Coover theory with bifundamental matter. So you have SUN, 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 etc. with bifundamental matter, with SUN left and SUN right global symmetry for the A case of the AD. And the D and the E version of them, they won't give you bifundamental matter. They'll give you what we call conformal matter. Because it turns out that when you have D singularities or E singularities, D7 brains or E7 brains, which are D or E type, then the object here is not free. So the bifundamental, you don't get the bifundamental multiplet. You get some new thing, which is conformal. And those are called conformal matter. Other examples of these 6D theories are the following. You take M5 brains and you bring it near the Hojava-Witten wall. And what happens there is that this in the F-theory language corresponds, again, these correspond to the bunch of P1s. The dual thing between the P1, you get the dual to this interval, has a slightly different property with respect to the other P1s, which are these other ones which we have talked about. And what that means is that, what does this 2 mean? So this P1 is the singularity you see in the A1 singularity, which is cotangent of P1. So that means it's the cotangent bundle. That's the 2 refers to the fact that it's an O minus 2 line bundle over P1. But this one is an O minus 1 line bundle over P1. So in other words, this labels the base structure of F theory. So this P1 is slightly different from the other ones. That's all. So otherwise, they would look the same. And sorry, I forgot to say, this theory that you get, if you just forget about this one, if you just take a single M5 brain, bring it close to the wall, you inherit an E8 global symmetry from the fact that on the Hojava-Witten wall lives an E8 gate symmetry. So if you bring and probe it, you're going to get an E8 global symmetry inherited on the M5 brain. And that's why this theory, the one theory which shrinks, gives you an E8 global symmetry. This theory has strings, which has E8 global symmetry, and this theory is sometimes called the E-string theory because of this E8 symmetry on the string. And it turns out that the structure of this P1s, the normal bundle, so these P1s live inside the four-dimensional base of the F theory, and the normal geometry of it could have different line bundles. So I told you about O-1 and O-2 previously, but there can go all the way to 12. So you can go numbers 3, 4, etc. to 12. And depending on which bundle you have, it forces some brains to live on the P1. So it lives to gate symmetry on the P1, SU3, SO8, F4, etc. So there's some very specific structure. And so these are the building blocks. And out of these, you construct the 1,0 theories. For example, if you talk about the SO8, E6, and E7 conformal matters, this is the equivalent to M5 brains probing SO8, E6, or E7 singularities. You will get, after you resolve the singularities, you get a structure of these chain of these P1s for which the local geometry looks like this, and you get intermittent gauge groups on them. You get SO8 on one, no gauge group on this one, SO8 and nothing, etc. On this nothing, you have that E8 global symmetry that I talked about before. So you have this quiver-like theory where quiver, in this case, does not mean just gate symmetry. In this case, there is no gate symmetry, but there's an E8 global symmetry on that theory, and we know we have studied these. This is called the E-string, and you get, for the E6 conformal matter, you get this kind of structure. And this, as you can see, this repeats. This repetition depends on how many M5 brains you put. So this is, like, in this case, 4 M5 brains, or 3, or whatever number you put, you get the periodic structure, and how many things are in the middle, and that thing depends on which singularity you have. Here you have one extra thing, here you have 3 extra things, and here you have, I don't know, 6 extra things, etc. So there's something, or 5 extra things in the middle, that depends on the singularity structure, and you get interesting and known pattern of these theories. And these are what we would call the conformal SO8 matter, E6 matter, and E7 matter. Okay, so that is all I want to tell you about, some general things about 6D, 1,0, except for the following fact, that 6D conformal theories are chiral. And so therefore, anomaly is an important aspect for them. And so you can consider the anomaly polynomial for them. So this will involve properties of, first of all, there's an SU2R symmetry. And there is also the tangent bundle, so there's a gravitational term. And we can talk about anomaly. So this P1 refers to Pontryagin class, and P2 corresponds to the second Pontryagin class, so P1 and P2 are the Pontryagin classes. You have to form an 8th form. We are talking about 60 conformal theories. So this is the anomaly polynomial, and C2 refers to the second Chern class of the SU2 curvature. So you have C2 squared or C2 P1. So you basically have 4 possible terms in the anomaly polynomial, and there are these coefficients, alpha, beta, gamma, and delta, which you can compute a priori. It has been computed by a number of groups, and in particular by Tachikawa and his group and others. And you can compute alpha, beta, gamma, and delta depending on the data I wrote in the previous ones. In other words, once I give you the geometry of these P1s and their intersection, there's a way to determine all these numbers. So the anomaly polynomials for them are determined. Okay, now we want to go down to lower dimensions. So what are the lower dimensions? Well, first of all, we go down to 5 dimension. So you just put the theory on a circle. That's relatively simple. All we can do on a circle is basically do nothing, except possibly, as you go around the circle, you can maybe put some automorphism of the 6D theory before you glue it. Otherwise, there's nothing you can do as far as extra breaking of the symmetries for this 1,0 theories, because the amount of symmetry that you can have is the same. In 4D, you can put the theory, to get to 4D, you can put it on a Riemann surface. And so, for example, Gaiotto studied M5 brains put on a Riemann surface and studied what kind of 4D theories you obtain from them. And here I would like to generally study more general than the 2,0 class, but the arbitrary 1,0 class. And I would like to focus on that. One fact I want to use, and this is a crucial link, is that there's of course a relation between these two. If I look at tubes in this Riemann surface, the tubes will look like a circle times a line, and if I know something about this 5D theory, when I go down on a circle, then I can say something about the resulting 5D theory along the interval. And in fact, that's what Gaiota used in his construction. Namely, he started with M5 brains, with NM5 brains, and he knew that if you put it on a circle, you get SUN gate symmetry in 5 dimensions. So he basically thought about these SUN gate symmetries living on intervals, and therefore this gave you SUN gate symmetries whose coupling was related. 1 over G squared was this length, depending on how you put them together with, to get the Riemann surface. So that's how he came up with the decomposition of his theories in terms of various components living on the tubes. And this will also apply to the 1,0 case as well. So let's first talk about some aspects of going from 6 to 5 dimension. Let's do the one example. This is the O minus 1 theory, which is what's called the E-string theory. Remind you, that was the same theory which is obtained by M5 brain near the Hoxha-Witten wall. Now, compactified on a circle, this leads to SU2 with 8 hypermultiplets. And this was observed by Seibert. And the argument follows the result of Polchinski and Witten. So their construction of Polchinski and Witten, beautiful construction of the heterotic string, was that if you want to describe heterotic string in type 1 language, type 1 prime, so they went on a circle. And so in the type 1 prime, you get an oriented fold, you get SO16 prime SO16 easily. But they wanted to get E8, and that question is, how does E8 arise in the context of type 1 theory? And what they found was that when the coupling of the type 1 prime gets strong at one of the oriented fold planes, you can end up getting E8 theory. So that's how they ended up getting E8 theory. And then it's clear how you, and then what did Seibert do? Well, Seibert put in addition, So Polchinski and Witten had D8 brain and oriented fold 8 planes. And the Seibert put D4 brains probing this. On the D4 brain, you get a 5D theory. So D4 brain came from M5 brain on a circle. So that's the relation to M5 brain probing the Hoxha-Witten wall. M5 brain probing the Hoxha-Witten wall becomes D4 brain probing the Polchinski-Witten oriented fold geometry. But that is easy to see what it has because there are 8 D8 brains in that geometry. That gives you 8 matter, 8 hypermultiplets. So this theory, SU2 with 8 hypermultiplets in 5 dimensions, should enjoy E8 symmetry. Because we know that the probe will have, in some limit, they should have, at infinite coupling, of course, for SU2, you should enjoy an E8 symmetry, something which is not obvious. Naively, this does not have E8 symmetry, but actually it ends up having, so naively you might think that's something like U8 symmetry, but actually it involves actually an E8 symmetry. And this turns out to be crucial for us later on when we talk about what lessons we learn, because this theory is far from getting anything having to do with E-symmetry. But Polchinski and Witten's construction explains why there is an E8 here. Now, conformal math on circle leads to affine Kurve theories. If you take 60 theories corresponding to M5 brain probing ADE singularities, you put it in 5D, you get affine Kurve theories. So that's a nice set of Kurve theories where the rank of the, so you get an AD affine geometries where the rank of the gauge group corresponds to how many M5 brains you put times the Dynkin number. So for example, if you have NM5 brains probing E8 singularity, by the time you come to 5 dimension, you get the product of SUN times SU2N, etc., with the hypermultiplet by fundamentals in this affine E8 geometry. So this is now ordinary gauge theory. So the main point is, by the time you go from 6-dimensional theory, which have no Lagrangian, to 5-dimensional theory, you suddenly get Lagrangians. Namely, you have an effective Lagrangian. So of course, these Lagrangians are good for capturing some topological properties. They are not as significant in terms of understanding what's actually going on at the conformal point, because the coupling of these gauge theories should go to infinity before you can actually talk about conformal points. So they are useful to some extent, but they're still not complete in that sense. Nevertheless, it would be very helpful to us to have this perspective. Okay, so that's all I wanted to say about the 5D theory. Now I want to move on to 4D theories. So I'm taking 6D theory on a Riemann surface down to 4D. What can we say? Well, the most obvious thing is that you would think that the marginalized space of Riemann surface will play some role, just like it did for Gaiotto theory. It should be a moduli of the 4D theory, whatever it is. So, but to do this, let's just make sure, how do we do this? First of all, the supersymmetry is broken if you take it on a Riemann surface. You have to turn on some background for the R-symmetry group. Turning on that background basically means using the holonomy of the Riemann surface and identifying it with a U1 inside the R-symmetry group. So for 2,0 theory, if you just take genus 1, you don't boot holonomy, you just get n equals to 4, that we know. But if you take U1 sitting in SO2 of SO5 with an SO3 left over, then you get n equal to 2 theories, and these are the class S theories that Gaiotto studied. Or you can take U1 sitting in an SO2 times SO2 of SO5, and some diagonal combination. This will give you a n equals to 1 theory, which were studied by this group. Now, so even the 2,0 theory, depending on how you realize this U1, can give you n equal to 2, n equals to 4, or n equals to 1. So already the 2,0 class gives you a bunch of these interesting n equals to 1, n equals to 2, n equals to 4, depending on what you do. Now, the 1,0 theory, this has only an SU2R symmetry, and you have to twist this symmetry, namely you have to identify the holonomy, you have to turn on the background gauge for this R symmetry, identify with the spin connection on the Riemann surface in order to preserve supersymmetry. But now it's unique because there's only one choice. There's only one U1 inside SU2, so there's no ambiguity. What you do, you just pick that U1, and then you turn it on, so you preserve supersymmetry, half the supersymmetry, so now you get n equals to 1 supersymmetry in 4 dimensions, generically speaking, if you take a generic Riemann surface, and you shrink the area to 0. And in the end, you expect to get conformal theory. So, naively, you might think all you get is just the complex structure of a Riemann surface, there's nothing left, so you would think that you get a 4D n equals to 1 theory for every 1,0 theory, which depends on the complex structure of the Riemann surface. Is there anything else we can do? And actually, that there comes a surprise. Yes, indeed, we can do much more. Namely, 6D theories, unlike the 2,0 theories, have global symmetries. When you have global symmetries, you can turn on holonomies on those global symmetries. You can turn on connections in this global symmetry. That doesn't break any symmetry, so we can do that. And that changes the theory, so you get much bigger moduli space. So, in fact, if you take a variation of the gauge Eno for it to be consistent with supersymmetry to get 0, you get an equation like this, where this F is the field strength having to do with the global symmetry that you're turning on. You get an equation which looks like F plus D is 0. This means that inside the U1s, inside this G, you can arrange them to be non-zero. So the Fs inside the U1s inside G don't have to be 0. Otherwise, you have to take a flat G connection. So basically, the moduli space of what you can do in this G-symmetry is take flat connections, except you can choose a certain number of U1s where you can turn on some flux, and then you can turn on with an addition with arbitrary flat holonomy tensored with it. So then this gives you a huge moduli space, much bigger than just 3G minus 3, which is the moduli of Riemann surface. So a non-zero D term there will break the maximal flavor symmetry. So if you take, for example, a U1 to the R subgroup of this global flavor symmetry, and H is the non-abelian symmetry which is left over inside G, you can say that your G breaks up to L times H. You turn on fluxes in this U1 to the R, so then you can choose flux numbers. So that corresponds to a lattice that you can choose for these guys. Basically, what's the integral of this flux on the Riemann surface? There are R of them, so you choose basically an R-dimensional lattice of choices. For each one of those lattices, you get a conformal theory. So it's already multiple, much more choices. You have now a choice of the integers there, choice of an R, and then you have also this H, which is the non-abelian connections that you have. Of course, the rank of this plus the rank of this adds up to the rank of G. The field strength you turn on H should be 0. And the variation of the field strength on L should also be 0. In other words, you can multiply this field strength by a flat connection on top of what you have. So the moduli space will, in addition to these discrete choices, will have some continuous additional choices having to do with these solutions. So the dimension of the moduli space of the conformal theory in 4D, you expect it to be the ones coming from Riemann surface. The amount coming from the marginalized space of flat connections, which is dimension of h times g minus 1, this is the complex dimension. And then you get r times g, where g is the whole, these r is the rank of the u1s that you have, and g is the just the usual abelian harmonic forms on the Riemann surface you can turn on. You get this many flat connections for this. You can also write this in dimension of l times h. L times h is the maximum g that you can get in 4D, because if you go to the point where the flat connection is turned off, non-abelian connections in g, h is turned off, which happens at the one point, then you will get this guy having the global symmetry realized as L times h. So this is the dimension of the maximum symmetry you can get on the 4D theory, time plus r. So that's another way of writing this dimension of the marginalized space, where g max is L times h. So let me consider the simplest example. Let me think about, let's go back to 2,0 theories, but view it as 1,0 superconformal theory. So then you can view this SU2 R symmetry times an extra SU2 flavor symmetry. So if you view it from the 1,0 perspective, you have an extra SU2 flavor symmetry. And you can choose the max, you can choose an instanton number or not, depending on what you do with it. You can have either not turning on any, which is SU2, or you can turn on a flat U1 inside this, and that will be the max G1, G max will be U1. And this turns out to be exactly the construction people already have done. This is the Benigni, Tachikawa, and Weck studied this. This corresponds to the geometry where the line bundle on the Riemann surface inside the M-theory construction, instead of being the cotangent bundle for Riemann surface, the two line bundles split, and depends on if the Gmax is SU2, the two line bundles split equally. So this gives you an example which was studied in detail there. The marginalized space is 3G minus 3 from the Riemann surface, but in addition, you have the marginalized space of flat SU2 connections, and that's another 3G minus 3. So they get 6G minus 6 dimensional marginalized space for this case, and they had checked this already in their examples. That this, they wrote down what putative conformal theory you get in 4D, and they use the 4D techniques to actually check this relation that works. What can we say about the resulting 4D theory from 1,0 on Riemann surfaces? Well, these are generally expected to be non-Lagrangian. So even in the Gyotto case, if you took more than 2 M5 brains, like N M5 brains, on a Riemann surface, we don't have Lagrangian description in 4D. Nevertheless, a lot of the properties in 4D N equal to 2 theories can be obtained from general properties of the properties of the M5 brains. For example, the superconformal index for them can be studied and this and that. So you can ask, what can we learn about these 1,0 theories in general on Riemann surfaces? So one thing we can do is to compute the anomaly polynomial for them in the following way. What happens to the anomaly polynomial? Well, you have the 8-dimensional anomaly polynomial, which involves a tangent bundle, the flavor symmetry associated with the groups, flavor groups, if you wish, and then you have, in addition, you have some R symmetry piece. And when you turn on the curvature on Riemann surface for the Riemann surface, that T has some background as well as FR, and depending on what you turn on for the global symmetries, you'll get some modification, and you end up by integrating that anomaly polynomial on the Riemann surface, you get a 6D anomaly polynomial for the resulting 4D theory. So just based on anomaly polynomial on what you turn on, you can predict what's the anomaly polynomial in 4D. Using the anomaly polynomial in 4D, oops, you can get what's called the A and C coefficients. And this is interesting because the A maximization, sometimes there will be mixtures between R symmetry and the global symmetry that you're left over in 4D. And the A maximization, as these guys showed, determines the mixture between the global symmetry and the R symmetry. And the asymmetry, A theorem, as you well know, gives you some indication about the degrees of freedom of this 4D n equals to 1 theory. So that's an interesting one. Without doing any detailed, complicated things, you can immediately determine existence of 4D theories with n equals to 1 with a huge number of possible A's just coming from this construction. You can predict the dimension of their marginalized space. You can predict maximum global symmetry you expect and all that. So it's a huge amount of data without doing actually any construction just by symmetries that you expect from 6D. Now, for example, if you take NM5 brains probing AK singularities, the flavor symmetry is SUK times SUK times U1. And if you keep the full flavor symmetry on the genus G, we find that you get these A and C coefficients for the 4D theory. This is just by doing that integral, the things that I told you, you can evaluate them. And as you can see, the A goes like, for example, N cubed for large N, which is not a surprise. That's, after all, related to the fact that you would expect that M5 brains, NM5 brains have N cubed degrees of freedom. That's consistent with this. Moreover, there's a K squared piece, which is consistent with the fact that there's SUK gate symmetry living in six dimensions, so that's quadratic in K. So K squared N cubed piece is kind of, you would expect, the anomaly polynomial to the degrees of freedom to look like. And so this is here, I've talked about what happens if you have no punctures. You can also add punctures. Punctures of various symmetries you can talk about. So in the 2,0 case, already there was an interesting kind of puncture, full puncture, or puncture which breaks some of the symmetries. Here you have a much more interesting structure because you have global symmetries in addition and what you do with those. And so there's a huge interplay between those, and there's a huge number of choices you can do. So some examples of them were studied in the M5 brains probing ADE case. There's no full classification of the choice of the puncture in these theories for 1,0, and it'll be interesting to see if one can fully classify them, but just from the example, it's clear that there's a huge number of them. Now, when you have a puncture type, the symmetry that you're dealing with breaks to a subgroup as you approach the puncture, so the G symmetry becomes a P symmetry. And this leads to a choice of the flat G bundle given by the point of the in the coset G mod P. In other words, there's an extra degree of freedom that you have to attach. And so for each puncture, you get this extra degrees of freedom. So in other words, if you add punctures, the dimension of the marginalized space would be the usual dimension of the marginalized space with punctures, together with the factors I already told you about. But in addition, you get an extra contribution coming from the data of this choice of this coset at the puncture. Okay, these are all generalities. Can we actually do specific examples, and what do we get in these specific cases? So let's talk about one particular case now. N equal to 2, K equal to 2, what does this mean? You take two M5 brains probing SU2 singularity or A1 singularity in M theory. So take A1 singularity, put two M5 brains on top of it, and put it on a Riemann surface. What do you get in 4D? That's the question. Well, the naive global symmetry, you might think, is from what I had said, is SU2 left, SU2 right, and the U1, but actually in this case it combines already in six dimensions to an SO7 global symmetry. So the symmetry in this case is enhanced from the naive one to SO7 already in 6D. So therefore, you're going to be turning on SO7 connections on the Riemann surface. And so the question is whether you choose U1s or not. Well, you can, for example, just not choose any U1s, fluxes, and just choose flat bundles of SO7, or you can choose a U1 breaking SO7 to SO5 times SO2. Or basically, there are these different choices of how you can pick U1s or U1 squared or U1 cubed inside SO7. For each one of these classes, and for each choice of an integer for these U1s, which gives their fluxes, you have a conformal theory. So from one 6D conformal theory, and for a fixed genus, you're getting infinitely many conformal theories in 4D already. So it's a very much bigger list than we are used to in the 2,0 case. And you can predict what kind of global symmetries you have, what geometries they have, and so on. So the A and C can be computed for all these cases. For example, it depends on what U1 you choose. So for SO7, you get this A and C. For the SO5 times U1, the value of the A depends on what flux you choose. This Z here is the integer corresponding to the U1 flux. And the alpha here is given by this. A maximization has been used to come up with this. Actually, Z, I said this integer, I meant this integer over this. We normalize it this way. Okay. So now you might ask, what about the trinian for these theories? It turns out the trinian of these theories can be constructed in terms of strongly coupled Lagrangians in 4D. And this uses the previous work by Gayotti and Razanat. And for example, for the SO7 theory, if you put it on a sphere with three punctures, this is what's called the trinian theory, you get SU2 times SU2 theory, with these matter multiplets, which you can write as there's 8 matters for each one of these SU2. So the picture here is that you identify this up and down with these up and down, and so you can view it like this. So there is SU2 with 8 flavors, and this SU2 with 8 flavors. And so there are these fields, and then these fields have some interactions which you go around, some quartic superpotential terms, some specific superpotential terms, and this gives you the SO7 theory on a trinium. You can check that the dimension of the moduli space agrees with the formulas I wrote before. The details doesn't matter, and in fact, it turns out that this theory has been studied by Dimofti and Gaiotto before, and it has a huge number of moduli. And at one point, the symmetry enhances to E7, and we have found evidence that this three-dimensional moduli space passes through this E7 point. But this E7 point, I'll come back to later. So this E7 point, so the fact that this theory at some point has an E7 symmetry is an amazing surprise from the viewpoint of four dimension. What does this have to do with E7? SU2 times has to do with 8 matters. But that should ring a bell. This is exactly what you will see in the Polchinski-Witten construction, where you have 8 brains, 8 D8 brains, and you somehow end up getting with E8 symmetry. Question is, does this E7 surprise of Dimofti and Gaiotto have anything to do with the Polchinski-Witten realization of the E8 symmetry? And indeed, I will argue later it does, so I'll come back to it in a moment. So anyhow, we can check, we can do various checks for these theories, and they all work and so on, so let me not belabor that point, so just trust that it works. So let me go to other examples, which is actually a much broader class. So you take, just to say quickly what I said here, is that you can put this in an arbitrary genus, it turns out, and you can study it in an arbitrary genus, but let me not talk about that for now. Let's just talk about putting the 1, 0 theories on tubes. Now the tubes are, what can you do on a tube? Well, the tube is 5-dimensional by the time you go on a circle, so that you can think of as a 5D theory. Except you can turn on flux on them. If you don't turn on flux, you're not breaking supersymmetry, because it's flat on a torus, on a tube. So the only reason you break the supersymmetry by half is because you turn on a flux. So let us turn on a flux, otherwise it's just a boring compactification on a circle. If you turn on a flux, you can move around the flux, so you can basically study the building block of the flux, where you can think about like localizing the choice of the flux at one point. Because there is a moduli, you can change the moduli so that they can come together. So you can localize where the flux is at one point on a tube. And so basically you have to study ingredients which look like a tube with the flux on it. But from the 5D perspective, if you take the circle sufficiently small, you get a 5D theory. And if the theory in 5D has a gate symmetry G, from the viewpoint of this point here, it looks like the global symmetry G left and G right. Similar to what Gaiotto had, namely the object would have an extra symmetry having to do with what gate symmetry you're getting. But in this 4D theory, on this guy, you get G left and G right as global symmetries. And you turn on a flux, U1 flux, inside the global symmetry G. So the question is, can one actually understand what lives on this domain wall? So in other words, the instanton flux, the U1 flux, behaves like a domain wall in this 5D theory. And we just have to know what lives on this domain wall. If you know what lives on that domain wall, we can glue them together and get everything we want in 4D. So the building blocks of this theory on a tube is simply understanding domain wall in 4D and what lives on it. And once we do that, we are done. So let's talk about the simplest example of this, which is this E-string theory. This is the theory of M5 brain probing the E8, the Hojar-Witten wall, so which has E8 symmetry. So let's put that on a circle. As I discussed before, that theory will have SU2 with 8 flavors in 5 dimensions. Therefore, if I put this on an interval like this, this G is SU2. And then there's another SU2. And there's 8 flavors here and 8 flavors here. The question is, what lives on this domain wall when you turn on a U1 inside the flavor symmetry? So you can choose a U1, which is part of the U1 of U8, and turn on a flux there. So you expect to have a global symmetry, which is SU8 times SU2 left times SU2 right. So this SU8 favors symmetry is, of course, part of the E8 symmetry. So depending on how you choose the U1, you can break the E8 to different subgroups. So if U1 instanton can break it to E8 to E7 times U1 or different ones. So depending on how you choose your U1, there's a natural basis for them, which is given by the Dinkin diagram. So for example, if you put the U1 associated to this one, you just kind of delete that node, it gives you E7, and then you have SO14 kind of like deleting this node, or you can put any, basically each deleting of each node gives you all these patterns of how you can put the U1s inside the E8. So by turning on flux, you expect the theory on the domain wall to inherit these symmetries, depending on which where you put the U1. It turns out this is the simplest one to realize. And so I will going to talk first about this one. And this works, this uses the observation by Gayotu and Hichio Kim, where they actually turns out to have studied this domain wall that we want, which gives you this U1 instanton. The U1 instanton turned out to be nothing but flipping a sign of a mass term in the corresponding SU2 theory. And you can just easily study what lives on the domain wall with no problem, and they studied it. And what you end up getting on the domain wall theory is basically you just get some matter, bifundamental matter, hypermodular, so it's not dynamical, so you just get bifundamental matter with an extra what's called the flipper field, which gives you a superpotential of the baryonic type. And then you have some the analog of 8 fundamentals here, which is the corresponding matter structure that you had. This is the SU2 with 8 flavors that you used to have before. There is also that 8 flavors that are living on the domain wall. So the structure of the theory living on this 4-dimensional domain wall is basically flavor symmetries with some flipper fields. And this half a unit of flux in U1 corresponds to this geometry and breaks E8 to E7 times U1. And you can kind of try to explain that from the geometry of how you get this. Depends on the boundary conditions you choose on the hypermultiplets of the SU2 theory. On one side is one, depends on the mass term, one goes to the other. And so depending on that, you get different kinds of descriptions. So this is, I'm writing the description corresponding to these boundary conditions for X and the Y fields. I'm here decomposing the hypermultiplet to the X and the Y field on each side. So two pairs, and so you can choose one pair on the left side to be zero, the other one being zero, and so on. And what you don't put to zero is left over here, and what you do put to zero is the other guy is left over here. And so this is the leftover matter field on each side. And so the geometry is very easy to understand, basically. And you get an effective superpotential which lives on the domain wall at x5 equal to zero right there, which is a term like this. You get this flipper field, which is the Q. B, which is a flipper field, and the Q, which is bifundamental, giving you an interaction like this, plus this potential. So the description of the theory is very simple. It's a little boring. There's nothing dynamical here other than there's a superpotential term, but no gauging yet, because this is non-compact so far. But now what you can do is to combine them. So you have one domain wall, one flux here, and another flux here, and you can glue them together. Now, the SU2, which was a global symmetry on this side, now becomes a finite region. It becomes dynamical. So the SU2 global symmetry now becomes dynamical. So that's why it went from a square to a circle. Instead, of the global symmetry becomes a gauge symmetry. But if this is still infinite, these two guys are still global symmetries. So you can just glue and combine that easily. And now, if you want to get a torus, all you have to do is to identify these guys. But now if you do that, this other SU2, these two are identified, and you get another dynamical SU2. So you get two SU2s with these 8 flavors. In other words, you get this structure. SU2 times SU2 with these 8 flavors, with some interaction, and that corresponds to flux equals to 1. It breaks E8 to E7 cross U1. This was the theory of Dimofti and Gayotu, and they had found a surprising, they called it the paper E7 surprise. Why did this theory for them have E7 was a mystery. They just observed that the superconformal index seems to come in representation of E7. But now this actually is an explanation. It is E8. It is E7 because you have broken the E8 by a U1 flux to E7, first of all. And that E8 comes from the heterotic string E8. So this all traced down to basically a string perspective about what this E7 is. So you're relating this fact in a 4D, which they discovered purely in 4D gauge theory, to a string, and in this case, the EA hadronic string. So that's the connection with the E7. So anyhow, you can study these things, and you can, I just mentioned this, the characters form the E7s, and the SU8 global symmetry, which is the naive symmetry, enhances the E7 in this particular way. And you can put now more units of flux. I put it as, I had put half a unit of flux, so that's why I'm taking even number of them. So I'm putting, if you put 2 units of flux, you just get more SU2s. And so you can study this theory. Nobody studied it a priori. But what do you expect? Well, you know the symmetries, you know the moduli space, you know everything about it, predicted from 6D, and you check it does hold its properties. You again see another E7 surprise in this case and so on, and so forth. But you can actually do something else. You can actually combine them in different U1 directions. You can choose one U1 in one direction, sorry, and one U1 different directions. So then you can break the SE8 to not to E7 only, but to other ones. For example, here, you're breaking it to SO14, or E6 cross SU2, depends on which way you align. From the viewpoint of the 4D, it looks quite mysterious. What does this have to do with E6? What does this have to do with, and so on. There's absolutely no reason. They look ordinary gauge theory with, you know, bifundamental and all that. And so it's totally mysterious why you get these exceptional symmetries, but it's perfectly clear from the 6D perspective. Now you could ask, what about the half unit of flux? What if I just identify this with that? Well, if you do that, you get SU2 here, just one SU2 with the 8. Now, you might ask, what is this symmetry? Well, it turns out that this, since you are half a unit of flux, you have to embed this inside the center of E7, outer automorphism of E7, which leads up to not to E7 symmetry, but F4. So here, magically, E7 is broken down to F4, and indeed, when you compute the characters of this theory, you find representation of F4. So again, you might think, what does this have to do with F4? It's just, you know, SU2 with some matter field, with it. It doesn't look like anything exotic. Mysteriously, but it has F4, and we understand it from the viewpoint of this 60 theories. Now you can say, what about E strings on arbitrary monsters? I just told you what it happens on a annulus. Annulus looks like a sphere with 2 punctures. Another way of saying it, I describe how you do this, so we know how to do this one. If I know annulus, which we do know, and if we know the trinian, then we can do arbitrary things. We can glue them together. So I already told you this. I haven't told you what do I do with that. Well, it turns out we guessed what it is by various things, and it seems to work. So I don't have any principal derivation of it. And so there's this theory, which is what we call T of E, which is basically an almost Lagrangian construction. And what we mean by that is that you have to tune the coupling constant of gauge groups to be infinite or something. So it's a bit morally Lagrangian. But it can be used to compute the superconformal index and this and that. So it's useful in that sense.
Sorry, you mean it's the coupling goes to infinity limit of some Lagrangian?
Yes, here? Yes. You will have particular limits of them, and that's going to be... So in some sense, it's good, but okay. Now, so it turns out that you can define it by... we define the theory to be SU2 squared gauge theory with some matter, and one can argue that T0 has a certain U1 symmetry that enhances to SU2 for some reason, that you can argue. And TE is obtained from this theory if you gauge this SU2 global symmetry. So in other words, you start with a theory which is an ordinary Lagrangian theory. Mysteriously, that one you can show that enhances to an SU2 global symmetry that you want, and then you gauge that. Okay, so that's what I mean, it's almost Lagrangian. You cannot explicitly write it, because then emergent SU2 global symmetry. But once you gauge it, you can write it. This is useful because you can now compute the superconformal index on A and C and all that, and you can check that it agrees with using the anomaly polynomial from 60 with what you expected. So you can actually compute it. So in other words, you can now use these two ingredients to compute arbitrary genus with punctures or no punctures, and use the anomaly polynomial in 60 to check it works. So all the checks you do works, which means what we have learned to do is the following. You take M5 brain, bring it to near the Hodge-Albutin wall, put an arbitrary genus Riemann surface, we now know how to compute the resulting 4D theory, at least for the basic quantities like the superconformal index, the A and the C, and all that. So that's quite a non-trivial thing. For example, so this TE theory, you can, for example, put it on a Riemann surface, So take a genus G-Riemann surface. This O minus 1 theory has E8 global symmetry in 6th dimension because it probes the E8 wall. Now, on a Riemann surface, you can turn on arbitrary E8 flat connection. Moduli space of that is 248 times G minus 1, just to show that the number is big, right? You take E8 flat bundle, which is this many dimensions, plus this meager little 3G minus 2, which is the dimension of the moduli space. So you expect that the moduli space of this O minus 1 theory on genus G is this big dimension. And moreover, it has a geometry of E8 flat bundle on genus G, which is beautiful space. It's very complicated, but you can kind of study it. And it turns out you can check using these trinion constructions that I told you. When you put them together, you find that indeed, using the Lagrangian description I told you, it exactly leads to this dimension. So that agrees with the expectation based on the 6D perspective. So you can say, what about other examples? You can put, for example, conformal matter on a torus with flux. So remind you what conformal matter was. These were NM5 brains probing the ADE singularity in M-theory language. We ask what happens if you put them on the tube. Well, the idea is very simple. All we have to do is to understand the basic building block, which is a domain wall for the U1 flux, just like what we did for the O minus 1. So it has ADE left times ADE right global symmetry. You can turn on, again, the flat connections in ADE and the U1, so it's a complicated thing you can do. What about the 5D theory? Well, we know what the 5D theory is. It's a quiver theory. So if you reduce on a circle, on the line, when you reduce on a circle, you just get an affine quiver theory of the type we know, where these are the Dynkin indices, times n, where n is the number of N5 brains. And so then you can ask, what lives on the domain wall? And it turns out that, for example, if you take NM5 brain on A5 singularity, you get on the domain wall this kind of matter structure with some superpotential terms. So these are just the SUNs, but these are now all global symmetries, and these are hypermultiplets with some superpotential. So this is what lives on the domain wall. And then now you can join them together. So you can join them together, and then the middle ones, just like the previous case, when this is an infinite line, but if it becomes another extra flux in the middle, these become dynamical. So out of these, you get dynamical SUNs with structures like this. And then depending on what U1s you turn on, these arrows might tell directions. So depending on how you turn on, which U1s and so on, you can break. It depends on changes the geometry of these diagrams. So for example, if you take one M5 brain probing dm plus 3 conformal matter with one m plus 1 first unit of flux, you get this kind of thing living on the domain wall. Again, these lines denote bifundamental fields, and this X denotes the flipper field. It turns out that this same theory I just told you has a dual 5D description, which the same domain wall can be written in a different way, because the corresponding theory, this theory, M5 brain on dm plus 3, when you reduce it on a circle, has three inequivalent 5D descriptions. One is in terms of affine quiver theory. The other one is in terms of a USP2N theory. And the other one is in terms of an SUN plus 1 theory. So you can have totally different looking description of the same theory in 5D, which means the global symmetries that you can get could be USP2N or SUN plus 1, depending on which edge you put. And so you can do this kind of game. And so you can put the domain wall with some units of flux. So with the 1/2 unit of flux, you get a description like this. And you can basically combine them together. For example, here you have combined some together to get this one. Anyhow, so basically you can play this kind of game, but it gives you non-trivial dualities in 4D. For example, you can get a duality involving this picture that I was just telling you about. Can hardly see it here, I'm sorry, but you have some basically SU gauge groups times SU with some SPs with some matter structure, and this turns out to be dual to SU2 products of all these SU2s with some matter structure. This looks totally crazy from 4D, but it just follows from these dualities in 5D. We don't even know what is the way to say it other than the fact that it's true by checking properties of this duality, so it works. And you can also do other examples. For example, you can take E6 conformal matter, and then the domain wall will give you something like this. Oops. So what does this do? Well, this looks, I don't know if you can see it, but it has a structure of the affine E6 domain wall, Kruber geometry, which is basically how you can see it is, you know, the numbers are 1, 2, 3, 2, 1. So those are the Dynkin indices, and you see these ranks SU3, 2, and the 1 we're not even writing, and so forth. So these are just the geometry of them. So you have 1, 2, 3, and yeah. So you get geometry which has to do with pairs of these affine Kubers on the left and on the right. That's why you have 2, 3. These are the 2, 3s associated with this. And it turns out which U1 you put, so you have 2 E6, because I told you that the conformal matter with AD has E6 left and E6 right symmetry coming from the left and the right side. You can choose one of the E6, let's say this one, and you put a U1 inside here. You turn on a U1 flux here. This breaks this E6 to SU3 times SU3 times SU2 times U1. This is this piece, times an E6, which is you don't touch. So you break the E6 cross E6 to this one based on this U1 flux, and that is this diagram. And now you can put them together, and you get a theory which predicts to have this symmetry, and you check it does. So you can do bizarre things from the viewpoint of 4D, but no problem from interpreting from the 6D. So the magic of these symmetries are explaining how this comes about. So what do I want to conclude? Well, the 6D theories lead to a huge number of new conformal theories in 4D. They appear to be new and very interesting. And the marginalized space can be geometrically understood from the 6D perspective to involve, in addition to the Riemann surface, but also a choice of bundles on the Riemann surface. Probably most have no Lagrangian descriptions, but many, especially on the tube, seem to enjoy a Lagrangian description of the type we said. And the example of NM5 brains probing AD singularity and E-string theory was studied. And for the 2M5 brain probing A1 singularity, we have a proposal for arbitrary genus curve with punctures. For NM5 brain probing AD singularity, we have a proposal for the tube and torus with arbitrary flux. For E-string theory, for arbitrary genus, we have a proposal with arbitrary punctures. And these have passed very non-trivial checks, and we have learned quite a bit from the 6D perspective about these 4D. And, so this is basically all I want to say. There's still much more to do because these are just scratches the surface of 1,0 theories. These are just prototypes of examples. And already this is a huge class, and let alone a systematic study of all of them. So this shows that we should have a perspective of conformal theories that we have studied in n equals to 1. The gauge theories are a very tiny subset of actual 4D theories, and this kind of illustrates the richness of these classes. So I think I'll stop here. Thank you.
Question?
Yes?
When the 1,0 theories have higher form symmetries, do they play any interesting role when you compactify, or do they?
Higher form symmetry, you mean? We didn't study higher form symmetries. That would be interesting. I'm sure they would have the analogous higher form symmetries in the 4D. There will be some, whether what you do with those, but there should be something. We didn't study that aspect. That would be interesting to study. Yes?
Do you have any diagrams for flows between conformal theories?
There are some obvious ones based on, you can think about the 6D perspective, like you can turn on some flux down or up. So there will be some relations. So we have studied some of them involving U1s with no U1s or less U1s. So those we have. So that in that sense, that much we have. But between different 1,0 theories, I don't know. But from a given one, with and without U1s, we have studied some aspects and they work, namely the A goes down or up, as you would expect.
Any other question? Okay, so let's thank you.
Thank you.